Welcome back to episode 56 of Chess Journeys, Tales of Adult Improvement. Here in Chess Journeys, we seek to not only capture the highs of rating gains, but also the plateaus, the pits of despair. And I just got to admit, last night I had one of those just horrifying losses. I've got two connected pass pawns against a 1963 in a classical game and managed to not draw it. Lose it. Oh my goodness. Okay, we'll move on from that though. If you want to support the show, you can go to Patreon Chess Journeys. I'd like to thank Jay Tuttle, Jay Garrison, Don Rich Burgess, Brandon Halsey, David Shriver, and Lindsay Newhall. There is big news. There's a new logo for the show. There's new merch open at the merch store. You can go to the show notes for that. And I want to thank our sponsor, Chessable. I'm up to 68 days now, I think. I've been doing the Checkmate Patterns manual quite a bit. Just trying to burn more patterns into my brain. I'm listening to Shanklin as he tears apart everyone in endgame strategy, which is a lot of fun. And you can do your openings there. You can do whatever you want in Chessable. They do it all. And if you want to appear on the show, like our guest today, he filled out the Google form in the show notes. And I want to hear your story. So let's bring him in. Let's bring our guest today. We've got Matt. He's a parent. He's an adult improver. He's a teacher, and he is a board game aficionado. Matt, welcome to the show, and have you played any chess yet today?
Hey, Kevin, thanks for having me. Yeah, I actually played chess today, and I played over the board chess with not playing a student, and it was like the second time in my life, I think, I played OTB, not at school. So, yeah, things are getting serious.
Oh, that's cool. You said with a student, as in someone who you are giving chess instruction to, or like a student at the school you work at?
Yeah, I have a lot of students at the school I work at just recently have noticed. Well, I had a few students a couple of years ago. I had a chessboard in the corner of the classroom that I picked up from another teacher when he was moving classrooms. You know, you posted the email like, hey, I've got all this stuff. Stop by, grab what you want. So I stopped by and I saw it was a learn to play chess set. It had one of those pieces where each piece had the moves that the piece makes on it. So it had like a really wide base. So I had that chessboard in, a student came in, saw it. It's like, hey, let's play Mr. B. So played with that student and it kind of spiraled from there where students have been like asking to play. I've now have 10 chess boards in my room. We're starting a chess club next year.
Whoa, that's awesome. First of all, I'm so jealous that you have your own room. I teach 5 classes and they are all in different rooms. So yeah, wow. What a world that would be where I could have my own room. Can any of your students beat you?
I lost to 2 students. One was self-inflicted. He was late for football practice because like our study hall game like ran after school and I knew he had to get to football practice. Yeah. I was up a full queen and he wouldn't resign. So I just started like blitzing out moves and ended up losing the game because I wanted him to get to practice. So
yeah, that makes sense. That's a good teacher right there. Okay. Is there a legend about you at your school? Is it like, oh my goodness, Matt is so good, or are you just like a dude who plays chess?
I think there is an unfounded legend. Like some kids came in and were playing during lunch this year. I'd have like 4 to 8 kids coming in and playing, and there was one time there was an open board and it's like, hey, Mr. B, you want to play me? And so I ended up like just they made some opening blunders. I was just like tactic, you know, like my queen was just like absolutely demolishing their entire queen side. And so like after 15 moves, like the kid just sat back and it's like, you're too good. Like, you know, none of us can beat him. And so then maybe a burgeoning rumor, but
yeah,
I think I've got some strong players. We hosted a tournament the last day of school and a 9th grader came in, said he was like 1900chess.com, 4.5 out of 5. I didn't play in the tournament, but you know, I think we've got definitely some couple 9th graders who can really ball at chess. So
I'm excited. Yeah, that's awesome. There's the legend at my school is that I'm an international master, which is hilarious that they even know what that means, right? Like I could have understood if they said master or grandmaster, but like who knows what an IM is. But then also it's funny because I don't know how many good kids there are, right? Because like kids are always coming by and like, yeah, I play a lot of chess. And I'm like, that's cool. And then they don't really know how to play chess. And then there'll be like the one kid who's like, yeah, I play a little chess. And you're like, oh, cool. And then it turns out they're really good, right? Because they're just more modest. And so I'm having a hard time figuring out, like, do we have some like secret legend chess players that I'm just unaware of? Because there's a 9th grader kind of like you, this ninth grader, very detached, not just from my class, but all classes. So not like academically motivated. Last day of school, my daughter came to school and I said, one person from each class can challenge her while we do this like mini 20 minute class. And that kid challenged her. And I was like, oh, this will be funny. Because my daughter's only seven, but she's pretty good. He demolished her. And she's like, that dude knows how to play chess really good, Dad. So we'll see. We'll see if he's a real deal chess player or if it was just one moment. I'm not sure yet.
Yeah, there's such like a wild disparity, I think, with students. Because like, you know, some kids will ask me like, are you good? And I'm like, well, I play chess. Like, I don't know how to answer that. Because like, I think in the grand scheme, I'm like a terrible player. But like compared to somebody who like just knows the rules, like I'm going to seem like an IM.
I know. It's so funny. The way I've started answering it is I say no, but chess.com says I'm in the 98th percentile. So you can decide if I'm good or not. But am I the world champion? No, and I never will be even close. Not a chance in this universe. All right. Well, Matt, let's go back in time. Or I guess let's start with, what is your current situation? It sounds like you're a teacher, but what are all the obligations in your life that are either detracting from your chess time or enabling your chess time?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've got like a really good situation. Like I have a lot of like family responsibilities, but I still like, if I wanted to, I could do 1 to 2 hours of chess like a day, I think. Nice. In reality, it probably is closer to 30 minutes, maybe like 1 to 2 blitz games and like maybe like 15 minutes of like a YouTube video or maybe like, you know, 15 minutes of like reading from a book. So like, that's kind of my like work calendar chess allotment. And then like you, I've got, you know, 8 weeks or so of summer vacation where once I catch up on all the yard work from the year, like I started, you know, working with a coach this summer for 4 hours a week, and I'm able to sort of get some actual study time in and learn some things that I wouldn't in just like a short chunk of time during the school year.
Okay, so you're trying to use that teacher profession in that similar way of like doing, it's almost like a boot camp over the summer where you're like, I got to cram as much as I can in the summer. Cause then school starts. Yeah. It's so funny how summer works for teachers. Like I tried to get everything done. I have to get a real ID. And so I went to the DMV and they're like, yeah, but your license isn't up for renewal for like 3 months. I'm like, you don't understand. In 3 months from now, I will be completely overwhelmed. This is my moment. It was funny.
I'm the same way. Like I make a notes list on my phone of all the yard work projects and like home improvement projects and, you know, vet appointments with the dogs, like all those things, like summer's the time.
Yeah, exactly. Like something will start going wrong in like May with my teeth. And I'll be like, can it wait until June 18th? And they're like, I guess. I'm like, good. Cause that's when I'll be back.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So we've got this similar life. Okay. Well, we'll start talking about what you do with your chess time in a moment, but let's go back to your origins. When did you learn chess? Did you learn chess as a kid? Did you pick it up recently? Have you been playing your whole life and you're actually a grandmaster? What's happening?
So yeah, when I was a kid, I don't know, probably middle school, we got like a family checker set and it was one of those where it's like backgammon, checkers, chess all in one box. And so like we'd play like some family checker nights with my brother, my mom, dad, and I. And on, you know, just like being a bored kid before the internet existed, we didn't have cable TV and all that. So like I just like read the manual for this board game and like learned how the chess pieces moved. But nobody would play me. Maybe my younger brother like maybe played one game, but like it just wasn't his thing. So like I'd play chess against myself, which is difficult to do as like a, you know, 12-year-old. And so I learned the rules, but I never really played. And then in high school, when I was a ninth grader, we had like club time once every month for like 2 hours. And so the first club time I saw a chess club and I'm like, oh, I know how to play chess. Let's go to chess club. So I show up to chess club. It was really like, I don't know, in my memory, it was like less welcoming than it may have been, but it just felt like not a great experience. Like everyone was talking about like French defense and like all this stuff. And I'm like, well, I know what the rules are. And like, I don't even know if I got a game or if I did get a game, like I just, you know, making random moves. So it felt really intimidating. And I think I decided during the next club time to just like go to the game store across the street and look through binders of magic cards instead. So after that experience, I haven't touched, I didn't touch chess from being like, you know, October, my ninth grade year until September 2019, when a student saw a chess board in my classroom and challenged me to a game of chess during study hall at the end of the day.
Wow. I feel like that is such an important story for everyone, that you need to be welcoming to new people, right? Like, chess can be very intimidating when you are new to it. Even just like, I remember in my early 20s, the people at the chess club I played at were jerks. It was so weird. Like, the 1600 guys acted like they were world elite chess players and like looked down on the newer people and were rude to them because they were so good. And I'm like, now that I'm 1600, I'm like, I'm horrible. Like, how could you possibly thought you were so good that you should be arrogant and rude to the newer people? Like, this doesn't even make sense to me. So yeah, I think it's such an important statement that you need to be welcoming, right? Not even just with like the jargon and trying to, you know, reach out to people and give them games and kind of talk to them like regular people. We have a couple newer people at the place I've been playing at, and I feel like it's hard because they show up and it's like a silent tournament hall, and they're kind of like, so, and they start like two people come together and they're talking and people are like, quiet. I'm like, oh, they're not coming back. Like, if we just spend this whole time yelling at them to be quiet, they're not coming back next week. So yeah, it's really challenging.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I'm trying to be intentional when I've got, you know, when we hosted this chess tournament, the last day of school this year, like trying to just be really encouraging to everyone who's new, like, oh, yeah. Hey, like, are you here to play chess? Like, what's your name? Like, awesome. Like, this is how it's going to work. So yeah, I think that's really important. Like, the people don't like to be made to not feel good about themselves in an experience. So if we can make people feel good about belonging in a chess environment, like, that's the goal, right?
I agree. And it feels like, especially right now, where so many people are interested who have no idea how to play chess. We did this thing 2 years ago at school, these called senior seminars. And so seniors could sign up for any seminar they wanted. And I thought, you know what? I'll offer a chess seminar. It'll be fun. Like, and these like big name people were coming, like big name directors in the film industry were offering seminars. And I was offering a seminar on chess, and mine filled with 40 people, and there were people on the waiting list. And it was just people, like half of them had never played chess before and were just like, I thought it'd be cool to learn how. And so it was just one of those eye-opening moments where I'm like, wow, there are a lot of people who just want to learn about chess right now. And for me, that was one of the most rewarding experiences. I just kind of divided the room in half and was like, okay, if you've played chess before, just go ahead and start playing a game. I'll teach these people how to play, and then we'll switch and I'll do a more advanced lesson for you while they're playing their first game. Those first games were great, by the way. There were these two young ladies who fell in love with the way the knight moved, and they only moved their knights around. And then they started moving the pawns down, queening them into more knights. And so they could have these epic knight battles. It was just fascinating. I was like, okay, you guys like the knights. That's cool. So lots of fun.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, so you come back 2019. This is pre-pandemic, am I correct? This is
It's about six months pre-pandemic. So yeah, I played against a student after school, and like, he needed to get to football practice. So like, even though I was up a queen, I was like blitzing out moves to try and like, you know, get him to practice so he wouldn't be late. And so like, you know, then a few more students were like, oh, like, can we play? And I'm like, okay, if these kids are playing, like, I need to like, I don't know. I need to maybe know more than the rules. So like, I think my wife was out of town for a work conference, I think. And so like, I got home and I like go on YouTube and I started finding all these like Chess Center St. Louis, like lecture videos. And I was like, okay, so like, this is what en passant is. And like, okay, this is how castling works, you know, reviewing things I didn't really even understand. And like, okay, so I should try and control the center and develop my knights. And like, so I started learning like these chess principles through like these YouTube series. And I think I like, what was most helpful to me was John Bartholomew had a playlist called Climbing the Rating Ladder.
Yeah.
And I thought it's like a really fun experience to go back and see what I don't know if it was chess.com or whatever platform he was playing on, like what it looked like a few years ago. But yeah, it was so helpful to see him play beginners and play simple openings. And like he'd do this thing where he's like, you can pause the video, and white is trying to sort of take up space and develop a piece with tempo, like pause the video and look for the move. So me as a like brand new player, basically, like those were so important for me.
And did you actually pause the video?
Oh yeah. Actually watched through that playlist, the Climbing the Rating Ladder series. I think I've watched it two or three times in its entirety. It was great. And I even do that now, like watching Daniel Naroditsky, you know, speed run videos. Like I'll do a lot of like pause it and think through like, what am I going to make for the play? And then like unpause it and see how my evaluation matched up with one of the greats.
Yeah, that's so awesome and differs so much from my approach to videos. I just cannot get into that headspace of like, this is an active learning experience. It is so hard for me to do that. The only ones I can do that for are openings videos, because I'll just bring up my Lee Chess study and kind of take the moves and put them in and look at them. But I just have such a hard time being active about video learning. So it sounds like you've done a really good job with that, which I think is important. Whatever learning you're doing, being active about it is the key.
And it's a habit I picked up from when I was playing Magic the Gathering draft pretty competitively. Like I would watch Hall of Famers post their draft videos to YouTube. And so I would pause it with each draft pick and be like, okay, like this is what I would pick and here's why. And then unpause it and hear them say, here's what I'm going to pick and here's why. So like that was kind of a habit from some previous gaming experiences.
Gotcha. Okay. So you're able to bring in effective learning techniques into your chess techniques.
Yeah.
Let's jump into Magic for a minute. Thanks. It sounds like, is that what you were doing before you picked up chess?
Yeah, I played like a few board games with my wife and friends, but otherwise I was playing exclusively Magic the Gathering from like 2016 until I mean, even like last summer, I was still playing pretty heavily, but I would do a draft with friends on Wednesday night and then play with a friend Saturday morning at the coffee shop, and then do a draft Saturday afternoon, carpool with friends Sunday afternoon for a draft, maybe Monday. So like I was playing a lot of Magic, and my play group is really good. Like I was playing against people who like win GPs. You know, a friend of mine is the head commentator for like the Magic esports, and like, you know, playing people who are streaming. So like we had a really good competitive play group, and so like that was a really big, like that was, I was pouring all my learning energy into learning new sets, you know, four or five times a year.
Yeah, and that's one of the really difficult but fun parts, right, is that with all the new cards coming out all the time, you're always having to sort of like re-update your information.
Yeah, and like I was exclusively playing Limited, so like we'd sit on a table and like open booster packs and like draft a deck and play it, or like play a cube. Yeah. And but yeah, it was like definitely like, you know, you've got 250 or 300 cards in a set, and like evaluating them and like coming up with heuristics for like what kind of things are good, like what should I be trying to do. And it was a really fun, like curious experience. You know, your first few drafts are like, I wonder, you know, this card would be great in the last set, is it going to be good in this set?
Yeah. And it's so different from the constructed formats where you really have to know the decks well, but you don't have to know every card in the card pool, right? There's like maybe 9/10 of the card pool where you're like, that's all trash. I'll never interact with it. I don't need to worry about it. Whereas in draft, you're like, yes, it's trash, but will it fit in this small niche spot that I'm in right now?
Exactly.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. I've been a long time card game player. I picked up Magic for 1 year, and it was during the year when they decided to power creep everything to the moon, and it was just such a horrible experience. It started with Hogak and then went to the Elk Lord guy. I don't even remember his name anymore. The guy who was so broken, he could like turn all your guys into 3/3 creatures, and Oko, I think was his Bisons, name.
I think is
Ono, something like that. Wow, it's hilarious how much I forget. Yeah. But yeah, and then it was like they had to ban like every card a month after they made it, and you're like, so I spent $90 on these three cards, and now you banned them. What are we doing here? Yeah. So yeah,
and my Magic story kind of ties into my chess story, because I was getting to a point where like I felt like I was pretty good at Magic. I was playing with this really talented play group. Last summer, I was like number 77 in the world in draft in like this one format for like the August season. And like, so I felt like I was good. And when you feel like you're good at a game with a lot of variance, you start to create the expectation of I should win.
Yeah.
And so like, I would draft a deck and I'd be like, this is a 10 out of 10. If I don't 7-0 this draft, if I don't 3-0 this draft, I'm going to be like really upset. And then like, I wouldn't draw my good cards. My opponents would draw great. I would lose. And I would just like become like a tilt monster. Like this is, you know, then I would play a game of chess and like, I was really bad when I first started. So I would lose and I wouldn't get upset about it. Mm. And like these games with variance where like, I thought I was good, when I wouldn't win, it would create a really negative sort of mood. And with chess, I have none of that. Like I played my fellow math teacher this morning at the coffee shop. Like I lost both games and I like was so happy, like driving home. Like I'm like, I had so much fun. I had a great time. Like I can't wait to like put the notation in and see what went wrong game one.
Yeah. I think that must be a part of the reason of why I've been able to handle losing so much better in chess. I hadn't really thought about that moving from because I went from chess to card games back to chess, and every card game I played, I was trying to find the game with less variance so it could more emulate chess. And then eventually it was like, wild idea. What if I just played the game I'm trying to emulate the whole time instead? Yeah. So yeah, I've been very happy to be back to a game, like you said, where there is nothing about what you draw. Though it's funny, people like to say there's no variance in chess. And I disagree with that because I think there's a lot of variance in like opening repertoires at the lower level, right? Yeah, grandmasters, they don't have gaping holes, but I do. And if you happen to play into my gaping hole, then it's like a huge advantage for you. And I'm sure vice versa. I'm sure my opponents have gaping holes that sometimes I get to play into.
Yeah. And I think the chess.com has this like deep analysis or like it's some feature that you can do, like it analyzes all your games, and they actually have a thing on there for like luck. Like when do you hang a piece and your opponents don't capture it? Right?
Oh, that's good.
Nice. And I think, which is an interesting way of thinking about luck in chess.
Yeah, for sure. I played a classical game last night and I noticed in the moment, I think my opponent might have missed a game winning tactic. And I didn't have a chance to go over it yet because it didn't end until late last night. I just put the moves in and now I'm very interested to see, because I don't want to just turn on the computer. Yes, the computer can tell me. I want to figure out myself first whether they had that game-winning tactic that I thought I spotted, and then we'll see. But what was funny is they missed what I think might have been a tactic, and then I had an awesome tactic, and they were very surprised. It was great. I ended up with two connected pass pawns, man. I think I already talked about this. This is how affected I am by this. I'm like, how did I not win that game? And then after the game, he was like, is this rating a real rating or not? Because, you know, he's like 300 points higher than me. So it's tough, man. It's tough. Okay. So you're handling losing better. Are you still playing Magic some, or did you have to sort of get rid of Magic to make room for chess?
So I think I was in the process of, and this is all like hindsight, you know, like reflection, but I think in 2019, 2020, like I was in the process of moving away from Magic. I think my competitiveness wasn't like matching up well with like the nature of a game with a lot of variance. Like if people aren't familiar with Magic, like some of the best players in the world will have like a 60, 65% win rate. So like, like I think I was having problems, especially like when my daughter was born, like, and she was just a baby. A friend was hosting a draft, a cube draft. And so I made plans. I arranged like with my wife, like, okay, I'm gonna take 6 hours this day. And like, I was looking forward to this for like a month, and I got there and I misread a card in the draft. And like, you know, this is an anti-cube. So like you wager cards from your deck at the beginning of each game. And plan was to like wager a bunch of cards. And I had another card that puts all the cards from the anti-pile into my library. So like I had this like next level scheme, but I misread the cards and it didn't work. So like, I'm like an hour into this like 6 hour event and I don't have any cards to play with, cause I've like anteed or wagered them all away. So I'm just like sitting there like at a bar. I carpooled with people, so I can't leave and I can't play. And I'm like, I was looking forward to this for a month, and like, is the experience. And I'm like, I need to like reevaluate, like, is this bringing me joy? Like I love my friend group. I have awesome friends in the Magic community. Like I liked hanging out with them, but the Magic itself was like waning in its ability to do what I wanted in my as a hobby.
Got you. So you think of it less as making a sacrifice in giving up Magic, but more of like a trajectory of that's kind of where you were heading.
Yeah. Yeah. And so then as I like that coincides my like my struggles with like my competitiveness and my entitlement within Magic and like getting tilted mm-hmm. was coinciding with me like learning chess and like having so much fun losing. Like when I started my chess.com like account, you know, they rate you like, I don't know, it was 1,000 or 750 or whatever. And I think I lost like 30 straight games. I dropped to like 506 or something, but I was having so much fun. Like I even had one player kept challenging me to a rematch and they kept playing like Wayward Queen Attack. You know, really, and I was like trying to figure out how to defend this. I kept, you know, blundering pieces and I had so much fun learning.
And that's why they kept rematching you. They're like, this dude is free ratings points. I love this guy.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. It's funny. My daughter had the complete opposite experience. You know, you go into Lee Chess and I think they put you in there at 1600. And then, so she had to just play people like 1,000 points better than her, and she hated the experience. So it's really interesting that, you know, like putting you in at such a high number and then you have to lose a lot to get down to your real rating. I think some people handle it great and some people do not. What I suggested to her was just start a bunch of games and instant resign them then, and then that will start dropping you into your predicted range. But yeah, she didn't want to do that. And then she didn't want to play. And so instead, what she does is just not play. Like, okay, that's not the solution I was hoping you were going to come up with.
Yeah, I think chess.com lets you select a level when you start and like they give you rating. Yeah, but I guess the positive with Lee Chess is you do lose like 200 points a game when you like have that provisional rating. But still, like it's even to lose two or three games is hard.
Yeah, it was. And also, the people are pretty good. Like, if they pair you against real 1600s,
like 1500s, no joke on Lee Chess.
Yeah, I think I said this last time on the podcast, but what I'm realizing more and more is anyone over about like 1,000 USCF, whatever that translates to, is good at chess. They will make the occasional move that loses the game, but they're good at chess and they make a ton of good moves. And it always shocks me when I play somebody who's very low rated how awesome they are at chess. And I'm just like, you're scaring me a lot right now. Like, could you please just make a horrible blunder and end this thing? Okay. So you've moved away from Magic now. You're into chess. It sounds like your initial foray into chess is you're going through John Bartholomew's Climb the Ratings Ladder. Are there any books that are helping you along the way? Are you doing any tactics?
I didn't really understand what, like how to study chess at that point. Like I was still like in the beginning. So what I did is I got whatever membership level on chess.com gave me like access to lessons and unlimited puzzles. And I would do every single beginner lesson on chess.com. Like I did the how the pieces move lessons, you know, like I was like, I love the completionist aspect, but my daughter was born. So I was on family leave. And so like, you know, my wife and I would go out to a coffee shop with my, like, you know, a newborn and like, you know, we stop at like a consignment store and look through baby clothes on the way home. And like, I'd be in the car with my daughter, like doing like a how the bishops move lesson on chess.com. And so I did all of the beginner chess.com lessons and I found them super, super useful, especially the end game stuff. Like I feel like I was like a level like 600 player, but like I knew opposition.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So like, I felt like I had like a really wonky game where like I'm hanging like two pieces per game, but like get me in an end game and like, we're gonna have some fun.
Yeah. So did that affect your gameplay at all? Did you start trying to like actively seek out trades to get to these end games?
I don't think I was that sophisticated, but I think it really helped me develop good chess principles. Like I you know, listen to a bunch of chess improvement podcasts and I hear like, you know, people, even like Andras Toth, talk about like habits and like fundamentals. And so by doing all of those like lessons, I wasn't learning bad habits. Like I was able to, like, as soon as I could like think about a game, think about like controlling the center and think about what's a good piece for, or a good square for certain pieces. So like, I think that really helped me not develop bad habits because I didn't have to break any because I was getting John Bartholomew, who was like phenomenal at fundamentals and good principles.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. So you're getting good principles. You're even getting the end game information that I have come to think is more and more important. Like if you know how to win the easiest end games, then you know sort of like why you don't want to have a horrible looking pawn structure in the middle game, right? Because you've already seen the end game videos and you're like, I know that if my pawns look like this, I lose.
Yeah, and like active king and all that stuff, like yeah. You know, it's really easy when you get into an end game. If your opponent makes a move, you can just sort of instantly know, like, they don't know what's going on right now. Yes. Like, okay.
Yeah, exactly. What was that? They just moved their king over to the side? What is happening?
Yeah,
I hear you. Okay, so that's cool. So what did that do for your chess then? Where'd you start out? You said about 500?
Yeah, I think I bottomed out, like, I actually wrote it down before to be prepared for this. I think I was like 506 or something like that was like my low. And then I didn't play a ton like of chess, especially over the summer. Like I started playing Magic more. But then by about a year, by like August of 2020, I hit 1,000 on chess.com rapid. So like I went back and looked at my chart and I did see a pretty steady climb, and I started like learning and opening as white. So like, I feel like that maybe gave me some confidence to sort of like create more familiar like board positions. So like, yeah, after a year I hit 1,000. And then the following year, so like most of 2020, I kind of didn't play a lot. Like I was watching like YouTube videos of chess, maybe doing some puzzles, but I wasn't playing a lot of games. And I look back and I actually like, after I hit 1,000, I went back and I hit 2,100 on puzzles on chess.com. So I wasn't really playing games, but I was just like on my phone like doing puzzles.
Yeah.
And so I like not playing games and doing puzzles for like almost a calendar year. Like when I did come back to games, I just felt so much stronger. Like, and I
question.
Had like
why were you not playing games? That sounds bizarre to me that you would be invested enough in chess where you would keep playing puzzles but you didn't play games. Was that kind of a thing of like you couldn't carve out enough time for rapid games and you didn't like blitz? What was the issue there?
Yeah, well, so I have this weird thing where I set a goal for myself when I was like a 500 player, like I'm going to get to 1,000, like I'm going to do it. And the Pog Champs, is that what it was called? Like those chess tournaments, like I found those like super cool. And like, you know, I was like looking at these players and I'm like, I just want to get to 1,000. That's like my life goal. Like then I'll be a respectable chess player. So I hit 1,000. And I think I hit 1,000 on like a 10 or a 13 game win streak.
Oh, you know? Wow.
And I was like, okay, I don't want to touch it. Like, I was like too nervous to like, I'm only going to play a game if I'm in a really good, like if I'm tired or if I don't think I can focus, like I'm not going to play. Yeah. So I'll just do puzzles. Like I was nervous to even go back to it. I think that was part of it.
Mm-hmm. I hear that all the time, right? Ladder anxiety. And I think this happens in other things, right? In card games and stuff, people get this all the time. I hit legend, blah blah blah, and I don't want to give up that number, so I'm just not going to play anymore. I went through a phase myself where there wasn't a number I was clinging to, but I definitely was like, I'm only playing if I'm feeling like at my peak condition. And after teaching all day, that was never. So right,
exactly.
I had to figure out a way to be like, okay. And this is what I told myself, Matt. I was like, when I play a tournament, game one, I might be at my peak condition, but game two, I will not be. I'm going to be very tired. And so actually this is good training because I'm training now for game two. Yes, I'm not training for game one. That would look different, but I'm training now for game two. So that was how I justified it to myself.
Yeah. And in using hindsight, I think I was really focused on my rating. Like all I cared about was the rating.
Yeah,
and so that was really dominating and causing problems. Like I was having anxiety because I didn't want to lose. Like losing was like, I dropped 16 rating points. Like I have to win two games to get back up. And so as I've sort of matured on my chess journey, I've like almost don't even care about the ELO rating anymore. And I think that it just makes me happier and I feel like I have a healthier relationship with chess and I'm focusing on the learning.
Yeah, I think that's such a great attitude. I think it's hard. I'm going through that right now. I profess to say I don't care about my rating. I just want to get better. But, big but, I'm playing this group on Wednesday. I played a 1,000. I beat them. I lost to a 1,500 in a position that I should have won. And this week I'm playing a 1,200. And if I win, I will lose 25 rating points for this tournament. If I lose, I will lose like 55 rating points. And I'm just trying to tell myself, Kevin, you're just going to play chess. And if that 1,200 shows up today and plays a great game, 1,200s can play great games. And it doesn't matter if you lose ratings wise, right? It'll matter because maybe there's something in the game that showed a weakness in your game that you need to learn. But I'm struggling with this. It's like the first time in a while where I have some ladder anxiety. And I'm like, oh my goodness, am I really going to go? Like, there's a little part of me that's like, what if you just didn't go? Then you only lose 25 points. Because like the difference between me winning and losing this game is I gain one rating point. And if I lose, it's 25 down. And it's just kind of like, oh my goodness. And it's so tough because it'll be like, I went 2 out of 3 and lost 25 rating points. And you're like, this is a weird system, but okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I hear you. I hear the anxiety. How did you break out of that? What's your tip to people for how you got out of this, what sounds like a very long stretch of ratings anxiety?
Yeah, I had something that I didn't. I created a Leech. I was playing on chess.com and I created a Leech Chess account. And I was like, this is going to be my like just fun account where I don't care about my ratings.
There you go.
I moved from playing 10+0 games to playing the 5+3, which is the Blitz on Leech Chess. And so I started playing Blitz and, you know, just getting crushed and like flagging all the time. But it really taught me like that it's okay to lose, like, and that rating doesn't really matter. Like, and I found that playing the so many Blitz games really helped me like learn patterns. Just like I needed repetitions, I needed reps in games. Like I didn't play as a kid. I know I didn't play in high school really. And so like I just needed to get games in to start learning patterns, and like I needed to be checkmated in really embarrassing ways to learn how not to get checkmated in those ways again. Yep. So I played a bunch of Blitz games on Leech Chess and started playing on Leech Chess, and that was my like, I don't know, I called it like my like sparring account. Like, I don't really care about the rating. I'm just going to play games. I'm never going to be afraid, try new openings, whatever. And then chess.com was going to be like my serious account. And so that helped me get out of that funk. And I started playing on my chess.com account again. I hit my peak rating of like 13-16 rapid. Wow. I think in January of this year, 2022. And then I was like, okay, like I had my trajectory was like really climbing. I went from like 1100 to 1200, no problem. And then 1200 to 1300, no problem. And I just felt like I was like dominating games. I'm like, okay, maybe I'm good at this chess thing. And I loved Magic podcasts. So I'm like, I wonder if there's chess podcasts. Like, that sounds like a weird thing. And so like, I remember like going into the Apple podcast search and like searching chess and like scrolling through. I'm like, I don't know. Like I saw Perpetual Chess podcast, which I now listen to, but I'm like, oh, there's a lot of book reviews. That's not my thing. And I'm like, oh, Chess Journey, Tales of Adult Improvers. I'm like, oh, well, that's me. So then I started scrolling through the episodes, and I don't know if it's episodes 7. I think it's Zach was the guest, who is also a Magic player turned chess player.
Yeah.
Listened to that episode, like fell in love with the podcast. And then the podcast, listening to it in January, like made me realize, okay, this is who I am. Like, I'm an adult improver, and nice. Maybe I should come up with like a study plan instead of just like doing puzzles and playing random games.
Yeah.
So I think one of your guests talked about the Jeremy Silman's Amateur's Mind. So after listening to the podcast in January, I ordered the book, started reading the book, and promptly lost like 250 ELO. chess.com. And like, so I was like, what is this? Like, these books, this is crap. Like, chess learning, this is crap. Like, what I'm thinking about backwards pawns, I'm thinking about good bishop, bad bishop, like knight versus bishop, and I'm just blundering pieces. Like, I need, and so I had this like real visceral negative reaction. And I think I had some conversations on Twitter with I think it was MathVet is and he's in a listener of the podcast as well. And we both, I think, hit 13-16 peak rating. We both were reading Amateur's Mind. We both slid into like the 1100s. Like, we had this absolute mirrored progress. And it was so helpful to like hear that other people were in the exact same situation as me, and like listening to more episodes of of this podcast. I just like stuck with it, and I'm like, okay, skill and knowledge are different things. Like my knowledge is increasing, but I'm not a, like, there's, my brain is thinking about too much stuff. So I started playing longer time controls, which I went 15 plus 10, was the time control that gave me more time to think. And then I started to just like internalize some of the things from the book. And I don't think, I think my rating is still under 1300, but I haven't been playing much on chess.com. And so like, I feel like I was able to like recoup that. And on Lee Chess this spring, I hit 1702 rapid and I think 1574 blitz.
Nice.
And so I climbed like 400 blitz points in like 2 months on Lee Chess. So I felt like I was starting to like translate the knowledge into skill. Although I say that, and really what happened is I just stopped blundering as many pieces.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge thing. I thought that this interview was going to go like this. I hit my high on chess.com, then I found Chess Journeys and Amateur's Mind, lost 200 points, and stopped listening to this episode or this show right now because it's just going to lose you points. So I'm happy to hear. Sounds like you rebounded with your points. So that's good. That's good.
Yeah. And again, I think it gave me perspective. So I had the perspective, and I think this comes from Magic too, where I was working harder than most of the people I was playing Magic with. Like if I was playing people online, I was putting in more work. I was studying the set more. I was listening to podcasts. I was studying what top players were doing for pick orders and understanding a format. And I think with chess, I'm like, I did chess.com lessons. I know one opening as white. Like I'm like, we're going to pair up and I'm going to like annihilate you now. Cause like I've done this work. And then listening to Chess Journeys, it was like, these people are the same rating as me and they're reading more books. They're working with a coach. They're putting in like five times more work than I was. Like they're going to surpass me, you know, like, as Omar has the saying, like, beat me while you can. And I'm like, all these people, like, I'm playing against, they're doing more than me. So, like, it really put it in perspective and, like, sort of made me less entitled. Like, I should keep climbing because I'm working and more of, like, I'm going to keep working. I'm going to keep learning, but I might not climb the rating. Like, it, you know.
Yeah, I think that's important. I had the same thing when I was playing card games. It just feels like, maybe it's because there's less resources available, but it feels like card game players that I knew didn't work at it as much as their way of working at was just playing and being like, I'm going to put the reps in and be good. Whereas the chess players I know understand that it's not just putting the reps in, it's doing all of these other things outside of the games. So yeah, I had a very similar experience where I kind of thought like, I'm studying this, I'm going to get good fast. And then it was like, oh, never mind. I'm not going to get good fast. And I'm also not studying enough because I don't have enough time.
Yeah, no, there's some work in chess. Like I think tactics work and like puzzle work, I think that can have like pretty significant impacts on like rating. But like this summer, I started working with a coach learning the King's Indian defense. And like, I feel like I learned so much information. Like, you know, we did like 6 hours of lessons on it. And then I spent like 6 hours reviewing chess base files. And like, I don't think I've gotten a single King's Indian game since then. So, like, you know, there's like 12 hours of work and like it has had zero impact on my rating. In fact, it may like the fact that I worked on that and not something else, maybe having a negative impact. So like, as we go through our chess journeys, the more knowledge we have often doesn't translate. Rating. Cause you just need to get those situations. Like it might come up, and when it does, like, I'm going to know like 13 book moves, but
It's, and again, that's the variance, right? Like if you had hit a whole bunch of King's Indians right after you did all that work, your rating is probably significantly higher because you're probably out-knowledging those people. And then that translates to the other side, which is like, at what ratings level should you be spending a lot of time with openings rather than just doing more puzzles, doing more strategy work, doing more basic end games? All these none of us know the answer to, so
and I in listening to other guests and like, you know, my own self-analysis, like I definitely think openings are super overrated, especially like kind of where I'm at with like, which is like, you know, 1700 rapid Lee Chess. Like I feel like up until this summer I knew no openings against d4 as black, like you know, I was just like figuring stuff out and I was hanging in there. Like I had a, you know, decent win rate. So like I definitely agree that learning openings is not like, if you just want to improve your rating, is not the way to go. And my outlook is like, I have summer, I have 8 weeks. Like, what better time is there than to actually learn a repertoire against 1D4 or against like oddball stuff? Like, you know, I don't know. Like, I had someone play the English against me and I just played King's Indian Verset. So like, I figured this is going to be something I can take with me like the rest of my life. Like, just learn, learn King's Indian, like, you know, book up a little bit on openings as black and make that my summer project.
Yeah, that's been my summer project as well, is to take my opening repertoire that I have and understand it better, right? Not memorize more moves. That to me is a whole nother thing, but to understand like, what are the middle game plans when my opponent goes into a Slav setup, what are they actually trying to accomplish? Not just if they do this move, I do this move, but like, what are their goals and how can I disrupt their goals? Things like that, which that has been really useful. I've seen it. What's been great is I've seen it in a couple of games already. Like, I was looking at a Karo Khan classical, just some motifs and ideas. And in an over the board game, those motifs and ideas came up and I was able to use them and win the game. And I was just like, yes, my work has paid off. It feels so good.
Yeah.
Okay. So to do your climb from 1,000 to 1,300, were you still, it sounds like you were doing videos, and what else were you doing during that stretch?
I think it was just videos and puzzles, and the videos are more of like, I would do them like, you know, maybe before going to bed, I'd watch like 15 minutes of video. I really like Eric Rosen's videos, because like I play the London as White, so he does a lot of London content. And I really like how he explains things. So like, I found his, on his Twitch channel, he does VODs of like classical, like Shield Arena tournaments, like playing 2020 games on League Chess. And I found those super helpful, because there's like 4 or 5 minutes between some moves where he's just like talking about the position. So listening to really good players evaluate a position and go through candidate moves was really formative and like giving me good like strategic thinking habits.
Nice. So until 1300, you had never read a chess book, right?
Nope.
Okay. And then you get your first chess book.
Yep.
It's Amateur's Mind, and it completely tanks your rating.
Yeah. And like, I had never done any chess notation, and I think I really struggled with this visualization. Like, and so when I was doing the book, I was just having a conversation on Twitter with, Jim from Michigan Slow Bones about this, as he's reading a book on visualization. And like, I actually didn't set up a board when I read the book. I didn't go through it initially. Well, I was on jury duty, so I was down at the courthouse, like reading the book. So I pulled up a Lee Chess study on my phone, and I'm like, oh dang, people have actually like programmed in like every chapter of this book on Lee Chess studies. Mm-hmm. So I was able to just like go through it on Lee Chess. And then I actually stopped doing that, and I would just take notes in the margins. So I would just visualize the position and take notes. And I told myself, like, I'm not necessarily going to like get the big takeaway from this, but I'm going to improve my visualization and improve my like mental calculation. So I sort of, I don't know, it gave me headaches and like my rating dropped, but I felt like I was thinking about the game in a better way.
Okay. Interesting. Did you complete the book?
Yeah, I'm on the test right now. I think I'm on like test 10 and 11, which is you have to annotate a game that you're just given the things for. And then you flip to the answers and you get to see Jeremy Silliman's annotations. So it's a compare game annotation test. But yeah, I'm doing the test right now. What I'm finding is I can find the first move on almost every single test, like 95% of the time, I can 100% identify the first move, but then I can't calculate what the opponent is going to play correctly. And so all of my future lines are based on like variations that don't occur.
Yeah, I have that problem as well. I've gotten quite good at identifying my opponent's second, third, and fourth best moves that allow me to win, but their first best move is actually quite good and I missed it. That is something I'm working on for sure.
And I'm having like the same issue when I do tactical end game puzzles with my coach. And I'm like, okay, I think my first move should be a queen sacrifice here. Like, I think I'm just going to like, you know, take their bishop with my queen. But then I can't really figure out why. I just feel like it looks good and it probably opens things up. And I can't calculate far enough to like figure out, like to prove it, if that makes sense. Yeah. So my coach's advice was, if your intuition is good, trust your intuition and just only calculate that one line. And like he actually said, just play that move. Like, but I tried that, and that's obviously a recipe for like 200 elo drop. And so I started like trying to just force myself, like if I think a move is good and my intuition is good, just calculate that line. Like, so don't focus on calculating every line, but calculate the line that my intuition says is going to be good. And I've found that's like been I don't know if it's translated to rating gain or not. Maybe I'm just like not that good at calculating, but that's my goal, is calculate to prove my intuition's good.
I like that. I found sort of the reverse of that to be the case for myself, where when I do too many tactics puzzles, I can always find the move, because it's just like, okay, this is a tactics puzzle and there's a queen sack that opens up the king. Obviously that's going to be the answer. Whether or not I'm able to find every bit of it or not is another question. But then when I get in games occasionally, I'll be like, ooh, there's a queen sacrifice that opens the king. And it's like, this is not a puzzle, man. Like, you're going to sack your queen. You better find out that it works. You can't just sack the queen and then be like, oh, this is not a puzzle. They had a defense. That's quite unfortunate. So I've had some issues with that lately. So I'm trying to figure out, do I need to like do less puzzles right before tournaments, so I'm getting that out of my head, or do I need to just do puzzles the right way and actually calculate them fully, which I claim that I do, but apparently I don't always do.
Yeah. And I never had like a strategy with puzzles, but my strategy was always to never spend more than like 30 seconds on a puzzle, which got me to like 2100 pretty easily. Like, I think that's doable. But once you start getting those higher level puzzles, like I almost feel like there's a lot of calculation involved. So now I'm torn, because I don't know whether I should just do like rapid fire puzzles and work on pattern recognition, or should I use puzzles to practice calculation and like do not solve it until I can calculate every single thing.
Yeah. And I think there's so many different ways to do that, right? What I personally do is I have three different types of puzzles I do, where I'll do like puzzle rush when it's just like straight up pattern recognition. And then I make ridiculous moves in that without even looking at the whole board, because I'm sure it's probably right. And then like my regular chess.com puzzles, I try to limit myself to like 2 minutes, right? Like most of them I can solve faster, but you know, some of these, like I solved one that was 2,700 the other day, and that took me a couple minutes to do. But even then, it's kind of like after a point, I'm like, I'm trying to do lots of puzzles here. I'm not doing a deep calculation exercise. And then I have different puzzle sets that I do, and it's like, now I'm practicing deep calculation. I'm going to set this up on a board and I'm going to stare at it for 10 minutes and calculate all these variations. That way for myself, at least, I try to be very intentional about like what my goals are for these different formats. And I pretty much only do puzzle rush when my brain is fried, which is even worse probably, but it's kind of hysterical. So, okay, you've gotten your rating to 1300, you read Amateur's Mind, you lost 200 points. Where are we at now? What is our goal? And then the second question is, how are we trying to achieve that? Are you reading, do you have like another book on the horizon? What are we up to?
When I hit 1300, I was like, okay, that was like, you know, now my next goal is 1400. Like, I kept setting like, and this is one of the things I was wondering and asking myself is like, what's my ceiling going to be? Like, I don't find myself to be a particularly gifted chess player. Like, I feel like I have to work really hard for things that just other people can just like clicks for them. Like, I was playing my colleague this morning, Mr. Holly, a math teacher at my school, and like he beat me both games, and I'm reading books, I'm doing lessons, like I'm doing videos, I'm working with the coach this summer. And I was like, hey, so like, you know, what's your chess background? He's like, oh, my dad taught me when I was three, and I played a little bit of chess in high school, and like I played a student like two times since then. And so like Like, I'm just like, it makes me really realize, like, you know, I know Neil Bruce always says, if you believe in yourself and you work hard, you're going to improve. And like when I was 1300 reading Amateur's Mind and like dropping rating, I started thinking about like, okay, like how much work do I want to do and where do I want to get to also like be happy? Like, am I happy just stopping hardcore chess learning and just playing like 10-0 tournaments or playing like Blitz? Like, and I started thinking about like, you know, as students in my school this spring have gotten really into chess. I don't know if it's like a Queen's Gambit has like transformed the image of chess, but I've got like, you know, the baseball team and basketball team coming in at lunch and playing. And so now it's like, okay, and I'm remotivated by like this group. Like I need to keep improving to get good enough to like possibly like mentor these kids. So like I have one student who's learning the London as white. I think he's about 1,000 on Lee Chess right now on Rapid. And I was like, so if you're going to play the London, like you need to, when you play 1d4, you need to know how to like counter 1d4 e5. Like you need to know like the England Gambit. And so like I was able to like walk him through like that. And so like that feels like a sort of the reason I want to get better is not necessarily because I want to keep climbing ELO, but just to be like a more solid chess player and able to like teach students who are coming in like basic stuff.
That's cool. That I think that's really nice that you can have reasons outside of just your points getting bigger because that one is, that one can be hard, right? Because, you know, they don't always go up. It doesn't matter how much work you do. Sometimes I had a year where my rating didn't go up and I was doing, you know, 2 to 3 hours every day. And it just, my rating was like, that's cool. You know, a lot, I'll grant you that. But that does not mean your rating is going up, sir. They don't always go together.
And our ratings are like comparative to everybody else in the pool. So it's really like not how much you're learning, but how much are you learning and how much is that translating to skill in comparison to everyone else? So, you know, if I'm in the same pool as like everyone else, if all the other 1300s are learning and getting better faster than me, I could be learning and like, it seems like a plateau. But yeah, I mean, I think in terms of like my goals, I want to hit 2000 rapid on Lee Chess. Like that's like my new goal. I've taken Lee Chess a little bit more seriously than chess.com recently. So like, that's kind of my goal, but I don't really care if I hit it. I'm just like, I want to learn and have fun. And I'm like, it's been I'm the kind of person that as a hobby, I like learning new things and chess is just fantastic for that.
Yeah, same. I feel like this is something I'll be able to learn at for the next 30 years and until my brain is just like, learning time is over, my friend. Now we're just into maintenance mode.
Yeah. It's also different for me because I don't have any tournament aspirations. Like I have no desire to travel to play in tournaments. I think if I did, I think my chess learning would be very different. Like if I wanted to go and travel to Opens, I think I'd be like thinking way more about like, what do I need to do to win?
Interesting. Okay.
So like, I think I'm in a unique situation like that.
Yeah, that is interesting. I do play, at least over the summers, quite a bit of over the board tournaments. And I still, for me, it's not about winning because, I mean, it is because it's great to win. But like for the World Open, for example, people were like, oh, you went to the World Open. How much money did you win? I'm like, oh, no, you don't understand. Like I played up to play against better people. And they're like, wait, what? The whole point of going to the World Open is to try to win like 20 grand. And I was like, no, not for me. I'm just trying to get better at chess. And so, yeah, I hear what you're saying. Some people definitely have that attitude of like, if I'm going to pay and travel, the goal is to win as much money as possible. But the problem is that just sets you up with so much pressure and that possibility for disappointment when it doesn't happen. Because like, even if you are overrated for your section, there's a decent chance there's three people even more overrated for their section than you are. And then you had these expectations for yourself that you were not only going to do well, but you were going to dominate. And man, that is just so hard to live up to all that. I try not to put that on myself and just say, I'm going to lose games and learn. And then when I win on top of that, well, that's just great.
Yeah. And I recently, you know, I got a chess clock came on Sunday, I think in the mail. So And I, you know, I met a friend yesterday, came over, we played some in my garage over the board. Like today I met another colleague, we played, like tomorrow I'm meeting another friend. So like one of my like goals here is to like just get a little play group going. Like I'm in the part of Seattle I'm in is kind of isolated. The bridge is out of commission right now. So like we're kind of on a little island peninsula. So just kind of get like a casual play group of people. And I want to get good enough to like not embarrass myself versus like the stronger players and you know enough to when you're playing over the board, like your pride's on the line. Like when I'm playing a blitz game online, like I lose, like so what? Like it's a blitz game online. But when you lose an over the board game, like it can be like it's the stakes are different, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You're playing for your pride and whatnot. So like that's kind of motivating too as I'm getting more over the board chess kind of in my life.
Yeah, I can understand that. I had a bit of that last night where I was one of the last games left and, you know, I'm this guy 300 points lower with this dominating position. And I'm sure everyone's thinking, not will he win it, but like, will he blow it, right? Because that's, he's so much lower rated. And so a lot of people watching the game and then, you know, I did blow it and people were whispering and I was just like, yeah, no, I know what they're whispering about. He blew it and that's fine. I understand. I did blow it. So yeah, it can be challenging.
And this is something I think about too, in terms of my chess improvement. I was listening to another podcast. Oh, I don't remember the name, but the person on it was saying like one of the five keys to chess improvement is playing high stakes chess.
Yeah.
But if you don't play high stakes chess, you're not going to push yourself to improve. And you like, so I've never played, I played my longest game today. We played 20 minutes per side. That was the longest time control I've ever played in my life. And so like, I question, like, if I'm not playing classical and if I'm not playing OTP tournaments, like I'm not getting the most out of myself. I'm not going to have these games to analyze or evaluate. Like there's only so much you can evaluate from a 5+3 game or a 10+0 game.
Yeah. Playing long games is just so awesome. Last night, for the first time since I came back, I got into time trouble in a long game. It was an hour and 55 minutes per side with delay 5. And I ended with 2 minutes and he had 45 minutes. And I was just like, I really took this long. Wow. Okay. I just hadn't been pouring that much of myself into the games.
And I mean, I flagged this morning in my 20-minute game and I usually play like 5+3. And so I'm like, part of it is, the first time I ever did notation. And so I also don't know how to use my chess clock properly. So I thought I was doing a 5-second increment. Instead, it was like a 0.5-second increment. And so I'm like, okay, 5 seconds, that'll be enough for me to like do notation a lot, not lose too much time. Mm. And like in hindsight, by the time I did the notation, because I'm so new at it, I probably spent like 20 seconds per move just notating
the
positions.
Right. That's
And yeah, I struggled like playing only online for like, what is it, you know, 2.5-3 years, and then starting to like roll out a chessboard, my brain just is not seeing the board properly.
Yeah, I can understand that. So you're finishing up Amateur's Mind. Do you have a book on tap next, or are you just going to go back to exclusively videos?
I don't know is the right answer. I know. Part of me wants to do Silman's Endgame manual and just sort of do the beginner endgame stuff, because I do think
that's a good one.
That like I want to use my reading to focus on sort of strategy and endgame stuff. Mm-hmm. There's also a book, the author Henderson, it's like intuitive chess or like intuition.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the name of it, but like that one is on my list. And then there's also the like 100 visualization puzzles that Slowbones Jim just started reading. So like those are some ideas I have. I'll probably do something. I'll keep a chess book on tap.
All right, let me give you a suggestion. Feel free to decline it.
Right, and I'm running down. So
I say your next book is Simple Chess by Michael Steen. I think it will be able to take what you took in Amateur's Mind and kind of like solidify it and take it to the next level a bit. And then at the same time, you could do Silman's Endgame course, because the beauty of that book is you can just kind of like, it's almost like an encyclopedia book where you're just kind of going through a little bit here, a little bit there. You don't have to read that like a regular book. The beauty of Simple Chess is it's very short. It's only like 140 pages. You get to feel like I read this whole strategy book. It's a lot of annotated games. So you're going through people's games and getting high level games, seeing good candidate moves. I just think it's a really great
like second strategy book.
Okay. And so, I downloaded Chessable, and I did a couple like the free courses. So I did like some of the short and sweet, but I don't know. I haven't found that that's like my jam. Like I think like I don't know. It feels like the, maybe it's because at my level openings are kind of like the Wild West, like by move four, we're in like, you know, a dubious sideline that people don't even bother putting in their courses. So I really think that like maybe I need to use Chessable for non-openings is really the answer.
Yeah, I would say get the Checkmate Patterns book. That thing is amazing. It's like it just goes through all of these different patterns and then gives you like 25 examples of each. So you're really hammering the Anastasia's mate into your head to where you're just kind of like, okay, when I see this pattern, I might not remember it's Anastasia's mate, but who cares? But I remember that, you know, I sacked the queen here and moved the rook over for the mate. I find that course to be really great. And it's written by somebody who's like, I don't know, maybe 1800 or 2000 or something. Like it's somebody who understands what sort of the lower level player needs.
Okay.
Okay. Last question for you. Coaching. You said you got a coach. What has the coach done for you? Do you feel like it's been, this coach has been really helpful? Has it just been kind of something that augmented your studies a little bit? What role has the coach played for you?
Oh, I figured this question was coming, and I still don't know how I want to answer it. So on the one hand, like I know on one of your, like, I don't know, maybe it was your 50th episode, you said, no one has ever come on my show and said a coach hasn't been good. And I was like three lessons in and I'm like, ooh, me, like I'm going to be that person. Okay. I'm going to say it. And then I started thinking about it and I'm like, no, I just don't think that's true. Like, so, I'm working with a coach. He's an IM, Nikola Radovanovic from Serbia. And he's a really high level player. Like he's like 24, 55. He's like playing in Bundesliga against Fabiano Caruana. So like he's playing really high level chess. And I think part of it is like, maybe I need a coach that's more like geared to like a 38-year-old who's just learning. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm also like, I told them before we started, like I want to work on opening. So I also recognize that that's also maybe not the most efficient. But as I'm having this thought of everything I'm doing with my coach, I could just do on Chessable or I could just do on my own. At the same time, like, having chess based files for King's Indian defense that I can just review and study is such an efficient process that I think it, like, what I've getting a coach has just saved me time. Like I was able to do something I maybe could have done on my own just much faster. I also think like learning helps when you have something to be accountable to. So now I know that like I need to study these like chess based files like in between lessons, like you know, we do like three lessons, go over all the lines and go over the ideas, and I need to study it because like I need to be accountable to my coach now. So I think it's good. I don't know, I the agreement we made was just doing lessons this summer, so two lessons a week, 2 hour lessons like Mondays and Fridays. And like I don't know if I'm gonna do it next summer, like, and if I do, maybe I would find like a coach more focused on like a different aspect of improving, maybe more like evaluating my game and like working on habits or something. So like, I guess the answer to the question is, I think I don't have any regrets, but I also question how a coach lines up with my chess goals.
Yeah. And I think that's really important, is to understand that, much like dating, right? You need to find someone that they may be wonderful, right? This is not any sort of evaluation of them as a coach, but they just might not be the person for you now, right? And I think exactly. That's so important that people fall in that trap of like, well, this is the expert, so they're my coach. And it's like, well, I mean, yes, they're awesome at chess, and yes, they're probably an awesome coach, but they just might not be the best coach for you in your current spot.
Yeah, and I think if I was playing tournaments and like really trying to like develop like winning, like what's the word I'm looking for, like if I want to be a cutthroat player and climb the ranks, and like if I want to hit like 2000 like USCF, like I think then maybe like this more serious, like I'm gonna send you a bunch of chess face files, memorize them, like that might be a better approach.
Yep, sounds like maybe a different coach is the answer for you, but it's good to hear you're still getting something useful out of coaching, yeah, even if it's not perfectly aligning with your needs.
Yeah, we're usually doing like 1 hour of openings. And so he's going over opening lines and talking through the ideas, and then help, like, what's really great, like, I can ask questions whenever. So like, I really think he's a great coach, and I'd recommend him for people maybe who are more serious, but like, he'll pause and ask me questions like, okay, what do you think we should do here? Like, what's our tactic or what's our idea? Yeah. And then in the second half of the lesson, we do either end game stuff or we do tactics. Nice. And I found that to be really great. I think for my confidence, like, there was one end game where he showed me the end game, and I instantly am like, okay, so here's how we're going to approach this end game. And he's like, that's great. I have a 2300 student who missed this. Like, you didn't do the obvious move. You did, like, you understood like what was really important, and like that the natural looking move wasn't going to accomplish that. So it's been really good for my confidence to be like, hey, I'm like, he uses this phrase, you're thinking in a good way. So just for me as a learner, like, having positive encouragement and having somebody who's really talented at chess tell me that, like, I'm thinking about a position in a good way keeps me going, I think. So
nice.
I don't know. Overall, it's a positive experience, and I would recommend it. Although I think you want to have goals going in and make sure the coach lines up with those goals.
Yeah. And if you don't have goals going in, which I think this is what happens a lot, is you're not even really sure what your goals are for a coach. But then you realize a few weeks in, you're like, oh, actually, now I do have goals. Tell your coach, right? And again, if the coach doesn't align with that, that's okay. You need a different coach. No problem. Mm-hmm. All right, Matt. Well, this has been a really great conversation. Where can people reach out to you if they want to follow up with you?
Okay, this is where I have to remember my Twitter. My Twitter is at MBAUDHUIN1. And I'm pretty sure I got that correctly. I'm also, my username on chess.com and Lee Chess is BAUDY14. So yeah, like, I'm happy to connect that way, but Twitter is the main way to reach me.
Okay. That sounds awesome. And I'm Dr. Skull on Twitter. Catch me streaming sometimes at Dr. Skull_TinyGrimes. I made a great video of my daughter and I yesterday. She was talking about her first over the board victory. It was great. She hung a knight. We talked about it. It was good. It was good times. Her opponent didn't take it though. So it was fun. All right. Well, thanks so much, Matt. It was a lot of fun today. And for those of you out there, keep up with your journey. I hope it goes well this week. I hope you reach all your ratings highs. And if you don't, that's okay. That's okay. Remember, plateaus are the norm. It'll get there. You'll get better. It's fine. And I'll see you next week, everybody. Have a good one.